Go to kboo.fm and click on donate if you'd like to become a member of this wonderful community resource, KBOO.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Outside the Frame's film screening of Leaving Home on Monday, November 13th at 6 p.m. at Portland Center Stage at the Armory in Portland. Outside the Frame will be hosting a special gala screening of new films by and with youth experiencing homelessness in Portland. The evening will also feature a Q&A with the filmmakers, and a Lifetime Achievement Award will be presented to Tia Plimpton to recognize her decades of work and mentorship with homeless youth. Again, that's Outside the Frame's film screening of Leaving Home on Monday, November 13th at 6 p.m. at Portland Center Stage at the Armory, 128 Northwest 11th Avenue in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of KBOO at the Clinton screening of Romeo is Bleeding on Thursday, November 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. Romeo is Bleeding is a documentary that follows Dante Clark, a young poet transcending the violence in his hometown of Richmond, California, by writing about his experiences. Dante and the like-minded youth of the city mount an urban adaptation of Shakespeare's Romeo and Juliet, with the hope of starting a dialogue about violence in the city. PDX Poetic Justice's John Slaughter and his group of poets will be reading some of their works before the screening. Again, that's KBOO at the Clinton screening of Romeo is Bleeding on Thursday, November 9th at 7 p.m. at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, here's a stumper. How alarming and charming is it is to be a farming? That's what the word's there.
I like it.
Good morning. This is Glenn Andreessen here beside you now until 12 noon. Welcome to the Dirt Bag. Here beside me is Jim Gilbert, fresh from the Southland. Probably not as windy there.
No, nice. 48 degrees, actually warmer than it is here in Portland.
Yeah, well, so, I think we'll get there, but we got to get rid of this east wind.
It's funny having east wind and rain. That's some kind of unusual.
Well, that's how you get freezing rain sometimes.
Yeah, that's true. Mm-hmm. That's right. Mm-hmm.
The south wind with the rain comes in before the east wind leaves with the cold.
That's not going to happen today, though.
No. Maybe some parts in the Hood River Valley, I heard.
Really?
Yeah. Okay. Okie dokie. Well, we've got our packed show as usual. Our plant of the month is rhubarb. I think we've touched on this just in the past, but I'll give you a little bit more on that. It's one of my favorite and, gosh, at least input plants that you can grow. Easy. Mm-hmm. Easy. I don't know that there's any pests for rhubarb. We'll find out, I guess. Let's see, we're going to talk about leaves and how to use those, and maybe more specifically, the nutrient content, and how good is that? And I have a little mnemonic device that you can maybe learn to remember which nutrients we know plants need. There are 18 of them that we know right now, and leaves have about 12 or 13 or 14 of them.
It's kind of like tofu.
You mean for us?
Yeah.
Well, that could be. And the another nice thing about leaves is that they're free, for the most part. All right. Let's see. Jim will be talking about, in addition to what's going on the farm, he brought in some CO2-ripened astringent persimmon. Is that correct?
That's right.
And he's going to tell us all about that. We tasted, we being Tammy and me. And he even brought a recipe on, is it persimmon quince?
Quince crisp.
Quince crisp.
Yeah. Or.
And we'll try to post that on our website, too. And we'll, but Jim will go over that a little bit. He says it's very easy to do.
Yeah.
And this is the quince season.
This is the quince season. It's also persimmon season. And I'm sure a lot of listeners have persimmons hanging on their trees.
Yes.
Right this moment. Not that they're going to treat them with CO2, but
no, but you said that it's pretty easy last month.
Yeah, and this month it is too.
No, I meant you said last month. Okie doke. Yeah, and then, of course, any questions that you may have, please give us a call, 503-231-8187, specifically related to the garden. Life questions, we'll handle those too. We've got a garden stumper, a new garden stumper, and an old garden stumper answer. I think I realized that we did not give the answer to last month's stumper. And that was, what plant was used in Oregon's first field test of a genetically engineered crop? Somebody called in with the guess of sugar beets, and then we went off on a tangent on that, but we never did give the answer to that. So a little bit later, I'll do that. Also, on our first tune break, I had so much fun last month on an answer or a quiz on the who is singing in the Montrose, if you recall. I have another one I'm going to play and see if you can guess who it is. But that'll come up in about 10 minutes. Anything of note that's happening in the gardening meetings? And
yeah, well, we did the All About Fruit show, which
that's right.
I understand. Did you go?
I was there. I gave a presentation on bees, beekeeping in the orchard. Well attended. Good questions. We did some honey tasting afterwards.
Kind of an interesting connection with the Home Orchard Society is that my partner Lorraine and I have just recently become members of the New Zealand Tree Crops Association, which is a nationwide group similar to the Home Orchard Society. And we're going to New Zealand early next April, and we'll be going to their annual meeting. So kind of exciting.
I was guessing that you weren't going to their monthly meetings.
No, we haven't gotten quite that ready for that yet.
Okay, but you will go to their annual meeting. Good.
Annual meeting, yeah.
All right, when is that?
Early, it's like April 6th and 7th and 8th.
Okay.
In New Zealand. And it's, you know, it sounds like a lot of fun. So kind of looking forward to that, making that connection.
Okay. I should mention that a friend of mine, Renee, did some cider pressing, apple pressing, to make cider a week and a half ago. And it was some of the best cider that I've ever had. And what she attributes it to is the little bit of crabapple that she put into it.
Mm-hmm.
And it was good. Yeah. I froze some and drank some.
Yeah. So, you know, a lot of the commercial ciders, I don't drink it because it's just really not interesting at all. It's just sort of sweet juice.
Well, this was a good one here. Several different varieties of apples.
I was actually walking around our mother block, or orchard you might call it, with my 2-year-old grandson this morning, picking apples, Spitzenberg apples off the tree still.
Uh-huh.
Hanging on.
Really?
And honey, Braeburns.
My neighbor has some Fujis that are just still hanging on.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a good time to get them off the tree, of course. You know,
yeah.
The birds will start, I mean, they've already started eating some of them, the ones higher up and stuff.
Or in our neighborhood, squirrels.
Squirrels.
That's the problem there.
We don't allow squirrels on the farm.
Well, that's yeah, that's good. So really no gardening events that we have on our calendars here until next year, probably.
Yeah, none that I know about.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just not really the gardening season. However, that doesn't mean we can't garden.
That's right. Just because somebody says it's not the season.
That's right. So let's start off with rhubarb, our plant of the month. You grow rhubarb?
I have. We're not growing it right now.
Well, I thought I would talk about this now is because this is one of the two times where you can divide the rhubarb. Mm-hmm. And it does better when the rhubarb does get divided because it gets crowded. And you probably should do it every 4 or 5 years. And some people will wait until the spring when the shoots are starting to come up, so you know where there's a live bud, if you will. But it's a little chancy then too, I think, because you might slow the plant down a little bit. So I prefer to do it now, or maybe into December. The way that I do it is dig it up, the whole thing, and depending on how big it is, you might be able to get 4 or more starts out of it. There's a bunch of its rhizomes. They're very thick and can be hard to get through, and so sometimes you might need to put a hatchet or something like that into it even and pound it. Mm-hmm.
Machete, maybe?
But yes, machete would work fine too, yeah. If you have one of those. Anything to help you split it apart. And you'll have a fairly good idea of where the eyes are, what's going to be the fleshy part of the plant. And so try not to split it right between them. But you can plant one of these divisions back into the hole and give away the other ones, or start a new crop or planting someplace. Give it plenty of sunshine and plenty of water. I think that's the main thing to keep in mind, is that these are large leaves that they are supporting, and of course you need a lot of water to support those. And another clue that they need water is that during a rain, if you go out and look, the leaves funnel that water right down into the crown. That's just the way that the leaf is the built. Actually, it's called a petiole, not rhubarb leaves, but that's so that was just a clue to me. Oh, they do need water. They also respond well to fertilizer, particularly nitrogen. That's a big plant. I've mentioned this in the past that I measured one of my rhubarb leaves at 39 inches across, which is tropical.
That's huge.
Yeah. Huh. And so there's not much that's going to be growing underneath that.
Mm-mm.
But
and you can't eat it either.
The leaf. What? The leaf. No. No, it does have a fair amount of, well, it has some poison in it. It also has oxalic acid in the plant, which is what gives it its bitter flavor, which is also found in spinach. And there's another common one that I've forgotten right now. But it... even though it is poisonous, it's perfectly fine to compost any part of the plant. It just really gets diluted, and the microorganisms really eat it up.
I wonder if that oxalic acid is what helps make rhubarb so pest resistant.
Could be. It doesn't help with spinach, you know, so much. The leaf miners are in there going, you know, it's just whatever pests that leaf miner probably has evolved that.
I would imagine the concentration in rhubarb might be higher than spinach. It certainly tastes quite different.
Yes. Right. And, you know, it's why we add sugar to counteract that.
Yeah.
So, sunshine, water, fertilizer, and divide them. I've done it in the past in December. It's just to find a good day there to do it, and it's kind of fun to get out there and do some gardening in December.
Yeah, and take advantage of this climate we live in where you can actually do that. It's not covered with snow.
Right. You know? Okay. One other thing about rhubarb that I wanted to mention is sometimes they will put out seed stalks. And I just did some research on that. And there's really nothing unusual about that, although I have heard that what can contribute to that is unusually hot weather. Mm-hmm. But if you do let that stock go, that it will, just like most other plants, it will then take energy to produce seeds rather than more rhubarb stalks. So the best thing to do is to pull it out, to cut it out early. And you really should pull it out, not cut it out. Or if you do cut it, to cut it way down to the ground, because that's where you cut off when it will start rotting. That will attract slugs and earwigs and other things. Not necessarily detrimental to that plant, but it's a breeding ground for that. Also, with rhubarb, the stalks, they should be pulled, too. Very easy to pull them. Well, it takes a little oomph to get it, but they'll come out underground a little bit, and that is much better for the plant. It doesn't leave any stub. It's kind of like pruning a tree or any plant. You don't want to leave stubs, which can be an invitation to disease. All right, let's see. Some rhubarbs are more red than others. I tend to like that, but there's nothing wrong with green rhubarb. And in fact, green stalks don't mean that it's underripe. It's just that that's the variety.
I have never seen a green rhubarb stalk.
Really?
Yep.
Okay, well, so, that's the way it can be that way.
It tastes the same and everything, too. Right?
Yeah. I'm sorry? Oh, I'm sorry. I can't hardly see you through all these things here. Okay. All right. Barry has a question.
Yes. Hello.
Good morning.
Yeah, I just had a little thing about rhubarb there.
Okay.
Show there. Sounds good. Chickens. Chicken manure, rhubarb. At least whenever I put chicken manure on them, I know it's kind of a hot manure, but they love it. And also, I noticed the chickens eat the leaves. They kind of peck at them. I kind of try to keep them away for that reason.
Uh-huh. Well, do you think that if you didn't keep them away that they would eat the whole thing?
I don't know. I haven't given them a chance.
So we don't know if it's a good or a bad thing, or a bad thing for them.
Right. So, I don't know. I just wanted to throw that out.
Okay,
there.
Great. Thank you, Barry.
Oh, bye-bye.
Yeah, that reminds me that I saw a cartoon once that the reason a dog eats something is to see whether or not it's food.
I can tell you some ugly stories.
Okay, we don't need those, though, do we? Right. All right. Let's see. Do not harvest rhubarb in the heat, as the stalks will quickly wilt. And they do kind of wilt down even when it's hot, but it's, you know, they'll perk right back up. And many plants do that. All right, that's enough on rhubarb, eh?
It's good stuff.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Okay, now let's go to our first tune here. The theme of this month is the wind blowing. How the heck did I come up with that theme?
It's pretty good. I'm sure
anyway,
you lay awake at night thinking about
it. Right. I'm not going to tell you who this artist is, but I will tell you afterwards. Or if you know, because this is, it might have been, I don't know if it's the first album from this group or not, but it's pretty old. And it has a little bit of, I think some telltale signs of what's to come later, but we'll play it. This is called Any Way the Wind Blows.
Anyway the wind blows is a fine with me. Anyway the wind blows, it don't matter to me. Cause I'm through with a fussing and a fighting with you. I went out and found a woman who is gonna be true. She makes me oh so happy, now I never ever blue. Anyway the wind blows, anyway the wind blows, anyway the wind blows. She is my heart and soul, and she loves me tenderly.
now my story can be told. Just how good she is to me. Yeah, she treats me like she loves me and she never makes me cry. I'm gonna stick with her till the day I die. She's not like you, baby, she would never ever lie. Anyway the wind blows. Troubles of the past took me much too long to see that our romance could last.
Okay, that Anyway the Wind Blows. I don't know if we got any. Did we get any callers on that? Okay, then I'll just tell you. That's the Mothers of Invention.
Mm.
Frank Zappa.
Wow.
Frank Zappa. And what kind of a harbinger of things to come with the bells.
Yeah.
In there.
Cool.
The mothers, yes. Okay, well, let's get right to this. Let's get to the phone first, and then we'll come back to the persimmon. I said let's get to the phone first. Tammy's on the phone. Okay, let's talk persimmon here first then.
Okay, all right. So we may have mentioned this before, or I may have talked about this a little bit before, but a year ago, my partner Lorraine and I went to a persimmon conference in Spain, International Society of Horticultural Science, and it was really fun, but to our surprise, we discovered that there's a large industry in Spain of taking an astringent persimmon, and some listeners may not recognize the difference, but there are persimmons you can eat when they're hard and firm, like the Fuyu and Jiro types, and then other kinds like Hachia, which is what you can sometimes find in stores, or a large acorn-shaped fruit, has to be soft before you can eat it. Otherwise, it does funny things to your mouth, and you will not like it at all. So that's the astringent kind. They take a very attractive astringent persimmon, treat it with carbon dioxide gas.
For how long?
24 hours.
Only 24?
70 degrees. And that treatment removes the astringency, but the fruit is still firm. So when we came home from that conference, we still had some time. We had some fruit. We tried it on a small scale with one variety, one of our varieties that was still around, and we were pleasantly surprised at how well it worked. And we did it very, very simply. We basically purchased a tank from a local brewing place, in fact, right here in Southeast, Steinbart, I believe it's called, a tank with CO2 gas, had a regulator on all that. We had a little rubber plastic tube, and we took that tube and we put the persimmons in a 2-gallon Ziploc bag and filled that bag with CO2 gas in our bathroom, which was the warmest room in our cool farmhouse. Left it in there for 24 hours.
Because you said 70 degrees.
Yeah, and we wanted 70 degrees. Came in, we took those fruit out, and they had just become a new fruit. It was like magic. Like, it's like creating a new fruit, which
well,
is
would,
bizarre.
What, you know? What would happen if you let it ripen naturally?
Well, then it would get soft.
And
then it would lose its astringency.
And it would be the same flavor?
Probably no. Actually, the flavor seemed different to us. It was a almost melon-like flavor that it had after the treatment, and very appealing. I mean, really a good flavor. As you noticed with these, you tried.
I did.
You know, it's a very nice fruit, and it's juicy, but still firm.
And the ones that we would find in the market, those are the astringent varieties, but they've been ripened.
Well,
because they're soft.
There's two kinds you find in the market.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So the flattish ones, typically flattish, are the Fuyu or the Jiro types that are grown, you know, that you can eat when they're still firm. And then you can find the hachia. I was in an Asian market yesterday where they were selling hachia persimmons, and they are the very large acorn-shaped fruit. Those you can't eat until they're soft. And some people don't like that soft texture so much. Oh, I love it. I think it's great.
Sure. But, I guess I like them all now.
Yeah. 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 But this is like a new fruit. It's sort of, I actually think I'm going to write a little story about this because it is something, creating something different.
Well, I have just one question on this.
Sure.
Do you have to take precautions when you open the bag because all that astringency now is floating in the air?
No.
Okay. So you don't absorb it and become a sour person?
Well, no, you become an astringent. There's an enzymatic reaction that goes on. And so the astringency just basically gets changed. It's like kind of, I guess, like the ripening process, but it may accelerate it, but it doesn't make the fruit soft.
So we're not quite clear yet on what the actual mechanism, the mode of action is.
Somebody probably is.
Yeah, okay.
But I'm not.
Right. Well, let's go to the phone. Matt has been on hold for a short while. Let's talk to Matt. Good morning.
Yeah, I have a question about ferns. I have a...
I'm sorry, small, about what?
Like, I'm sorry.
What was the question about?
Oh, so I have a patch of land on my at my place that has a lot of ferns.
Ferns, okay.
I was thinking about clearing it out, but the ferns are, you know, they're really pretty. But it's a hobby farm, so I was wondering about cultivating them, if it's, you know, if I can cultivate them, maybe take them to farmers markets and sell them, or, you know, how a guy should succeed with his ferns, you know.
You're talking about the fiddleheads, right? The young ones that you can eat.
Well, all the ones that I have are really big.
They're probably the sword ferns.
Yeah, but the young...
really pervasive.
But what would you sell them for as a farmers market? Just for decoration?
Yeah, I guess so.
Fans.
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
I'm just kidding.
I just didn't know what to do with them, but they're really nice plants, and I kind of want to clear out that piece of property to use it for something.
The first thing that came to my mind is that, well, ferns generally live in shady areas. So are you clearing out the overhead stuff, too, to grow more stuff?
No, I'm just thinning out some of the trees that have just, you know, that are just too thick in there.
Yeah.
But I want to leave it a really nice shady area.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's probably the best thing to grow there then. All right. But I've, to my knowledge, I don't know that I've ever seen fern fronds. I'm assuming that's what you would be selling.
The little fiddlehead ones?
Well, the fronds, yeah,
The fiddleheads are the ones you eat, but they're not the fronds. So if they're sold, I mean, I've seen those for sale. I don't know how intensively you can harvest them and what you can get out of, out of that. But the decorative frond, which of course is the bigger leaf of the fern, would be a totally different item.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Well,
don't have a good didn't have a good answer for you there.
All right. Well, thanks anyway.
You bet. Sorry.
Bye.
Yeah, that's a new one on me.
Yeah.
But I encourage thinking like that.
Yeah, that's right. Well, things for shade are challenging.
Edible stuff particularly.
Yeah, right, right. I mean, Arctic Beauty Kiwi likes shade, although I don't know if it would like to be total. Well, it actually grows in quite a bit of shade.
Yeah.
You know, for fruiting plants, though, mostly are sun lovers.
Right. Okay, well, to the persimmon then, the O2, you know, people... if you had a tree, that you could do that yourself.
You could, and there's like the brewing supply places sell the CO2 gas, and I guess it's used in a brewing process.
So I want to get this straight here now. Again, you have a bag.
Ziploc bag.
A Ziploc bag, and how do you get the CO2 in there?
When we got the tank, we asked them to attach a tube. Plastic tube to it. It's about 2 feet long.
All right.
And there's a valve on the tank, and then another smaller valve on the regulator.
Yeah.
So you open the tank, and then you insert the tube into the bag and close it most of the way, so that push most of the air out, so the bag is empty of regular air. put that tube in there, leave it open just a little bit where the tube is coming out, and then turn on the small valve on the regulator, and it goes, and then after, I don't know, maybe 30 or 40 seconds, it fills the bag with CO2 gas. You quickly pull the tube out and close the bag.
And that's it?
That's it.
Doesn't run continuously?
No.
I'll bet you have a lifetime supply of that then.
Well, I haven't used it up yet, so we'll see.
How many bags have you done?
Oh, I don't know. We've probably done 20.
You can get bigger bags.
Right. Well, if you really want to do this on a scale, you could get a room.
And you'd have to have a tree.
Well, yeah.
Well, you probably have plenty of trees.
We have trees. You know, we're thinking, I mean, this could be something interesting to just try to market, you know.
Yeah.
This is a secret. Listeners should not spread this too widely.
Okay.
You know,
yeah.
You want to like...
This is Jim's... Jim's got his thumbprint all over this one.
My retirement plan.
Jim, you're never going to retire. Okay, Lee?
Yeah, well, first of all, it's called pie plant, not rhubarb.
Pie plant, excuse me.
Okay.
That's what you make pizza out of.
No, you make pie out
of. Oh.
Good pie, too, as long as it isn't real sweet. I had a real problem with yellow jackets this year. I bet you they got 40% of my grapes and maybe a third of my apples.
Mm-hmm. On the tree?
On the tree.
Uh-huh.
I mean, they were getting in, you know, they were getting the grapes before they were fully ripe.
Yeah.
Right? And they were doing the same thing with the apples.
Well, I'm just going to take a guess here. Is this a newer problem?
Yes.
Yeah. Well, what I'm going to suggest, the apples wouldn't be this, but the grapes may have been infected by the spotted wing Drosophila fruit fly first, which softened them up and opened them up so yellow jackets could get to them.
I didn't see that.
Well,
I'm familiar with that.
With the spotted wing?
With that nasty invasive.
Right, okay.
We have the same problem. I mean, if we don't harvest our grapes, and I know that's just a typical problem now, is that, you know, there's a lot more yellow jackets and other wasps that are around that like to eat on grapes. I'm surprised to hear about apples. I've not experienced that with apples, but I think that, you know, if you're growing grapes, if you got some Remay or something similar and covered the row with some, like, if you know what Remay fabric is, it lets air through, but it's too small
floating row cover sometimes,
yeah,
it's called.
Yeah, and so the insects can't get through it. I think you could protect your grapes with that.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
It's bad. It basically, I took some of it and made verjuice out of it. You know, because, you know, that's something that's made from non-ripened grapes.
Yeah. Well, no, I didn't know that. But what I'm thinking is that if you did have the problem with the spotted wing Drosophila, you'd certainly have the fermentation going on in the grapes. I have that problem with a later variety of blackberry, the Triple Crown. And I have it in my grapes, too, the spotted wing.
Okay.
Where are you roughly located?
I'm close to Sublimity,
which is
east of Salem, about
suburb of Staten,
yeah,
so
you're,
to speak.
You're kind of in my neighborhood. I mean, I'm north of there a bit,
yeah.
but some of the similar idea. I would suggest that you try getting some floating row cover, Remay, one of the brand names of it. If you place that over, you can cover your row of grapes with that. It will, early enough in the season, you won't have spotted wing Drosophila problems either. We don't have that. We don't have apple maggot at our place.
Jeez.
And it will keep the bees away from them, and they'll ripen probably a little bit earlier too, because it will actually make it a little warmer underneath there.
Well, I used a netting to keep the deer out, but the deer, you know, would either crawl under it, or if they couldn't crawl under it, or, you know, find an end, they just take their hooves and pick a hole in it.
Yeah, that's a different problem than I face in the city.
Well, I wish you could have some of my problems. They would move there.
But I'd say try it. If you know what I mean, if you can get it, I think at most garden supply places, that's what my suggestion would be, is to cover your grapes with that row cover.
I got 140 feet of double wire grapes. Grape arbor, and I'd have to basically seal it off?
Well, yes, I would say so, but you don't have to do the whole thing. Just, you know, do the ones that you don't want yellow jackets on.
Yeah, and the material is not expensive, and you can reuse it year after year, and you can get it in different widths. So it's really pretty simple to put, you just drape it on there. You probably put something along the edge to hold it down.
I would think with yellow jackets that you may not have to seal it because they may not be smart enough or be able to go underneath up to the grapes and then figure out how to get down. They may get in, but then they're going to fly up. And they'll be trapped, which is fine with you.
Well, they're voracious and they work at night.
Yeah. Well, certainly early morning. I mean, as a beekeeper, you know, we face yellow jacket problems every fall. And, you know, so I hear this all the time about, you know, well, what do you do with those things? You know, well, put up traps is one.
Yeah. Yeah, they're not fun to be around yellow jackets.
No, because they bite or sting or whatever the hell they do.
Mostly sting.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, sorry, Lee.
I'll try.
Gosh, Jim, are we zero for one today? Zero for two, I mean? Didn't know what to do with the ferns. Although somebody could called in here, Deanna, called in and wants that guy's ferns. I have her number. You could have her call me in back. So, Matt, if you're listening, call Tammy in the air room.
What's the phone number?
Tammy's got it.
Oh, what's the phone number to call Tammy?
Oh, the same number they've always called, 503-231-8187. And we have one more call?
I think maybe two.
Maybe two. Okay. We'll go to the first one in any event.
This is Francesca.
No, sorry.
This is Bonnie.
Hey.
Sorry, Bonnie, you with us?
Yeah, I just wanted to say about the ferns, I believe that Matt just wanted to clear some area, and those ferns, particularly their sword ferns, are much prized by people who have native habitat in their yard. It's a great understory, and animals can hide there, and it's evergreen, and just use the whole plant, and he could just pot them up and take them to the market, give them, or charge maybe a dollar a piece or something. I know native plants can go for a lot of money. Also, we use deer fencing on top of our leaves at our community garden spot, which is 20 by 20. One year we noticed all the leaves that we had placed on there, load after load, vanished, and they had all blown away. So now we weight them down with our tomato cages and use deer fencing over year after year, so we save it and use it again. But keep the leaves down. We put like 50 bags in our 20 by 20 plot. And And they're not shredded.
Yeah, it's great to prevent compaction, weed growth, keeps the soil organisms active.
Perfect.
So leaves are
Thank
great.
You. Well,
you bet.
That's your show.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Great. Okay, Tammy, what do we... Now Francesca's coming up.
Francesca,
you're up.
Hi, can you hear me?
Sure can.
I'm harvesting potatoes for the first time, and I'm wondering if I should leave some of the tiny ones or green ones that maybe have sprouts in the ground for the spring.
Well, if they would be volunteers and they would... You wouldn't be able to rotate your crop, so to speak, which is generally a sound practice if you're growing potatoes there, and you know, year after year after year. But I can almost...
Yeah, I have a spot just for that kind of reason.
You can. They will grow, and they'll sprout now. I have had some potatoes that are... Well, the growth was close to 2 feet tall already. But...
Wow.
And I can... I don't know that I can guarantee you, but pretty darn close that even if you harvest every single one there, you didn't harvest every single one. Next year, you're going to find something that you missed. But be prepared for the top growth to be frozen down. It's tender. So any freeze that we have, it'll nip it down, and then it'll have to come back. So, if they're starting to sprout... I don't know. Sometimes what I do is just tear off that sprouted part, but harvest the potato and then just use it for seed potato next year to set it aside. I'm not going to eat that one.
Along the same lines, though, I was thinking of leaving my dahlias in the ground instead of, you know, pulling them up like a lot of people, most people do. Do you think that, like, black plastic mulch would be a good thing, or should I have more of an organic, like, leaf or, I don't know, even wood chips as a mulch?
Well, probably the more the better. Oftentimes what some would do is to put a pot or something over the cut stalks so water couldn't travel down those stalks in down to the tubers. And so, you know, anything that you can do to prevent that would be good. You know, most of the time I leave my dahlias in the ground. Last year, though, I lost maybe half the ones that were not right up against my foundation. And the ones that were against my foundation had 100% survive. Just, you know, the house just helped. But it was an unusual year last year, too. They normally will survive. But if you have some prize ones or something like that, then it's not hard to dig them. And what I do when I dig them is rinse them off. I mean, just hose them off. Get all the dirt and rocks that are in there. Let it dry well. And then I don't even store them in sawdust or anything like that. I just put them in a planter. Sometimes I use 5-gallon buckets, just put them in there and then monitor them, because if it gets cold, they'll rot. So, you know, in your garage, or I keep them in my garage unless it's going to be very cold, and then I'll move them to the basement, but then I'll take them back out to the garage.
But I have like so many that I'm thinking of just doing the plastic.
Yeah, well, you know, you have so many, then you can afford to lose some.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, you're welcome. But I think no matter what you do, make sure you cover up the stalk and then mulch it with whatever.
Okay.
That would help a lot.
Great. Mm-hmm. Sounds good.
Okay.
Have a good day.
You bet. Thanks a lot. Okay. Let's take a break. What do we got up here next here? Which way the wind blows here? What do I got? Let the South Wind Blow. This is by Grinder Switch. Probably never heard of them either.
Never have.
Okay. Oh.
Times that I remember when the air was freezing cold and the old north wind would cut me down, take the spirit from my soul. People change, they rearrange. One thing that I know, something about the way that warm old south wind blows.
Grinder Switch from the South, some of that Southern rock in the 1970s, but I kind of like him. Put out at least a couple albums there. All right, time for the stumper.
Okay.
Time for the stumper, and here comes Tammy now. Here comes Tammy now. Okay, take it away, Jim.
Okay, so did you want to go back to the previous stumper?
Yeah, we have a. I'll give the answer to that after.
You want to do the first one? The current one first. Okay,
right. So this is a two. We get a double whammy.
Twofer, right? Okay, so kiwis, which are ripe now. If people have kiwi vines, they should be picking their fruit before it gets a hard frost. The kiwi, the cute little fuzzy guy that we see, the varieties, the commercial varieties that we have been growing and been growing for many years came from New Zealand. Obviously, the name kiwi, you know,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah,
right,
that
right.
Flightless
the
bird.
Kiwi fruit, for the kiwi bird, right. So at any rate, the garden stumper is what they're not native to New Zealand.
And the United States.
And nor are they native to the United States.
Okay.
Nor are they native to Italy, where they're grown a lot, or numerous other countries that they're grown in. What country are they native to?
All right. If you know the answer to that. 503-231-8187.
The new Cadillac Eldorado awaits. No. In your mind.
That's right. Okay, then the answer to last week's puzzle, the garden stumper, we will not, you don't have to call in here. We didn't get the correct response last month, so we'll just tell you what it is, and that's the question being what plant was used in Oregon's first field test of a genetically engineered crop? The answer is the russet Burbank potato back in the 1980s.
Well,
it's been around for a while.
Yeah.
Okay, so if you know the answer to the native country of the kiwi, 503-231-8187. We can give some hints if it goes too long without it.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, with being able to search all these different things, I mean, you know, a person could just like whip that up and assess what you think.
You know, the Eldorado would be theirs.
That's right.
But no.
Let me describe the Eldorado. All right.
Okay. Well, let's talk about leaves here a little bit. I didn't bring my list of the 50 ways to love your leaves because I did that last year. So this year, I want to talk about why or how leaves benefit you chemically wise or nutrient wise, if you will. But first, this little mnemonic device that you can learn, and I'll try to post this on our website, as well as the recipe that Jim's going to share with us soon, on how you can remember all 18 different nutrients that plants need. You know what a mnemonic device is?
I've got some sense of what you're talking
about.
That's
like if you want to remember the names of the how many days are in each month. You can count your knuckles.
Mm.
You know, the knuckle parts are the 31 dayers, and the valleys are not.
Wow, I never did that.
Well, that's just a visual mnemonic.
Oh.
And then there's others about every good boy deserves favor. That's the lines of the musical staff.
Hmm. You went to a different school than I did.
I went to the school of hard knocks, baby.
Knocking on those knuckles,
and,
right?
And he, with failing memory, needs these now.
Okay.
Yes. So right, here off. Are the 18 nutrients in this little mnemonic device. C. Hopkins Cafe, managed by mine cousins, Mo and Clyde Nico. I know, it's totally nonsensical. But in there, embedded in there, are the 18 chemical symbols. So we're going to talk about, let's do the first one, C. Hopkins, okay? C, the letter C, carbon. Hopkins, H, hydrogen. O, oxygen. P, potassium. No, phosphorus. K, potassium. Hopkins is spelled without the I.
Mm.
N, nitrogen. Sulfur. So there we have right there, the first six. By the way, the first three are free. C-H-O.
Free?
Carbon, hydrogen, oxygen. The air and the water. You don't have to pay for those.
I got it.
So our task as gardeners is to make sure that our plants have all the other nutrients in whatever level they need. And then we heard about macro nutrients and micronutrients.
So all those other words in your sentence?
Okay, C. Hopkins Cafe, C-A-F-E, calcium, iron, C-A-F-E.
Oh, got it. Okay.
Managed, M-N, that's manganese, mm-hmm. or it's magnesium, I can't remember, but they need them both. Managed by B, boron, by mine. MN, that's manganese or manganese. Cousins, CU, copper. ZN, zinc, mo, molybdenum, Clyde, CL, chlorine, C. Hopkins Cafe, managed by Mine Cousins, Mo and Clyde, Nico, N-I, nickel, cobalt. There they are. I would never have been able to remember those any other way than that.
And you know, if you wouldn't get through a spelling bee either with this.
Nope.
So, all right.
Yeah. And here's how it's connected. Is unfortunately I forgot my sheet, but leaves, as I mentioned earlier, have at least a dozen of those. Most leaves, mm-hmm. and they also are free. Mm-hmm. Now, when you mulch with leaves, people have talked about mulching with leaves. Some of our callers have mentioned that today. If you are mixing them into the soil, then undoubtedly you will need more nitrogen next year because these are more are carbonous materials, the leaves, and they will use the nitrogen that's in the soil to break down. They will eventually. That nitrogen will be eventually made available back to the plants when those organisms die. Mm-hmm. But just remember that if you're mixing your leaves into the soil, add more nitrogen the following year. However, if you're just putting those leaves on the surface of the soil, like I do, in fact, I've already spread leaves around my still producing pepper plants. Just I mowed them up with my lawnmower to mulch them up. It's a good way to pick them up, too. It's a lot easier than raking, plus it makes them smaller. And I did this when the leaves were dry, so they sometimes just shatter, which makes them very nice size. Just shake them around the plants, shake the plants, and the leaves just fall down there. Plus, it kind of keeps the wind from blowing mm-hmm. them mm-hmm. around. And I leave the leaves there all forever, really. And then I'll plant through those leaves the next year. Mm-hmm. So many of the leaves that I'm using are Norway maple leaves, very common street tree. It's now, though, considered a nuisance tree by the city of Portland because of the vast numbers of seed pods, and then just everywhere. I don't have any on my property trees, but I certainly have a lot of neighbors' leaves. Mm-hmm. When the east wind blows, there they come. And you know, for the most part, it's okay, but they're everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you must have a lot of leaves in Portland because there's lots of trees.
Right, we're not in a leaf zone where you have to pay to have your leaves picked up, or you can, if you don't opt out, you get charged to have your street leaves picked up.
Interesting.
But don't have that many, but still, I take my neighbors after they rake them up. I show them where to dump.
Their leaves right on this particular garden.
pretty good deal there. Right.
Yeah.
But the reason I mentioned maple, the Norway maple leaves, is because I'm just going to talk technical here and we can get into this later, but it has a carbon to nitrogen ratio of about 57 to 1, which may or may not mean things to some people, but that means it's fairly carbonaceous, but not excessively so. And if you mix that with grass, which can be about 20 to 1, you add those together and you're pretty much ideal. So you mow your lawn with leaves on it and compost that, and boy, that'll heat up in mm-hmm. a day or two. Mm-hmm. Very nice mm-hmm. there. So don't discount leaves. The micronutrients, mostly, they don't really have a whole lot of nitrogen. They have some, but not nearly as much as manure. But manure doesn't have hardly any of the micronutrients either. So if your chickens and your rabbits, mix them into your compost with those leaves, and next spring you'll have some very nice compost. Mm-hmm. All right, that's my two bits on leaves.
Good. Sounds good.
All right, C. Hopkins Cafe, managed by Mine Cousins, Mo and Clyde Nico.
And you're going to put that on the website, right?
I will.
Okay.
I'll have to figure out where. But.
And be sure not to spell it correctly. So
right. Also, we're going to put this recipe on. You want to just go over that very briefly here on Quince Crisp?
Yeah, sure. So essentially, this is my partner Lorraine's recipe. I have to give her due credit for this.
Did she just make this up?
Well,
maybe.
I mean,
she wrote it down.
She wrote it down for me this morning so that I made sure that I could read it because her old one was a little bit rough.
Okay.
And essentially, it's like apple crisp. I mean, it's not a big difference. The main difference is you probably use a little less fruit because quince is a little more dense, so it cooks slower. So if your layer of fruit is a little thinner, you'll get all the cooking done, no problem. And then instead of using cinnamon, as you do it in an apple crisp, you use nutmeg.
Okay.
And I could read this real quickly, but basically you take a couple of large quince, or if they're really large, one is enough. And depending on the size of your baking pan, we use like a lasagna pan, cut it up in pretty small pieces, kind of like chunks.
Would you peel it?
Nope.
Okay. But core it.
Yeah, cut it in like four pieces, and then you then
it's
you
can, somewhat like an apple.
Yeah,
I mean you could either peel the apple or not. But
the quince peel, the skin is very, very thin.
Okay,
and I would not recommend peeling it at all. And then using a large quince, you then make a single layer inside your lasagna pan, your baking pan, 3/4 cup of brown sugar. 1/2 cup of rolled oats, 1/2 cup of whole wheat flour, 4 ounces of oil, canola or olive oil, 1/4 cup of chopped nuts, walnuts or hazelnuts, and 1/8 teaspoon of nutmeg.
Okay.
And I actually made this just like 3 or 4 days ago, and it was delicious, especially with some organic vanilla ice cream on it.
Is that on the recipe? That's optional, right?
That's optional, but right. It really does make it really excellent.
Well, that dessert. Sounds tasty, all right.
Yeah, it's good.
I'm going to see if I have any quince left on my tree. I didn't have many blossoms. The tree is on its last legs. It's hollow.
Mm. Quince are fun. I mean, they're beautiful fruit and aromatic.
Oh, boy, that aromatic is right.
And, you know, there's some really cool varieties out there, Russian quince like Aromatnaya, Kaunching, Kuganskaya, the ones that we brought many, many years ago to Oregon, and they're sweeter than the older ones. And so
makes all right, good. So you're going to send that recipe with me, and I'll try to get it onto the website there.
I'll do it.
All right. Isabel has a kiwi answer. Let's go talk to Isabel.
Okay.
You ready? Ready for? Oh, you ready for the El Dorado?
Yeah.
To win the El Dorado.
Oh my God! Really?
I know. Just get. I'm sure you're excited.
Yes. All right. What is it?
The top.
I'm sorry.
China would be the answer.
That
China is
right.
The correct answer.
That's right.
Go warm that engine up right now.
Yeah. Oh. It runs.
Well, that's another issue.
Oh, yeah, we got this from the city of Portland, from one of their lots.
They're still attached to the tow truck.
But. Yeah. But thanks. Thanks, Isabel.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, China was aced by New Zealand. They had this beautiful fruit, and they never really got into doing anything with it. And New Zealanders saw the promise, and back in the 1930s was when the first development was started with kiwi breeding in New Zealand. And maybe we'll have a garden stumper about another fruit that they've done the same thing with that's not native to them, but that they did.
They took it and ran with it. Okay.
Yep.
Very good. Okay, what do we have here? I don't know that we have time for our last. Yeah, let's just go just a few minutes, just a few seconds of our last Any Way the Wind Blows. This is J.J. Cale, but joined by E.C. We'll be right back. Okay, J.J. Cale and Eric Clapton. Okay, we've had a request for, just briefly, C. Hopkins Cafe, managed by mine cousins, Mo and Clyde Nico. C. Hopkins Cafe. I'll list all the, you can look up the chemical symbols on it. But first, we want to get just cold protection.
Quick,
30 seconds.
Very important information. If you have potted plants sitting outside on your patio or yard or someplace, and it gets cold, and now we can get into cold, some arctic air that will come, you want to make sure that the potted plants get protected so they don't freeze. They may be hardy, maybe an apple tree, which could stand minus 20 or 30 degrees, but the pot itself, the root system, cannot do that.
So and it's above ground.
It's above ground.
Yeah, yeah.
Protect it. Wrap something around it. Put it someplace where that root system won't freeze, because that's going to kill it.
We don't have any cold weather in the forecast, but I'll bet you in December we do.
You know what happens. And it's,
that's right. It can happen at any time.
Yeah, that's right.
Right. Okay, Jim, thank you very much. Packed show. Hopefully we'll see you next month.
Yep.
December.
Sure.
Great. Be in time. This is Glenn Andreessen. That's our story so far. Thanks for listening.
It's 12 o'clock, time for the KBOO Noon News, and then stay tuned for jazz.
KBOO Community Radio holds an open meeting concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934. And certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available by calling the station at 503-231-8032. Meetings will be conducted at 20 Southeast